I'm Steve Gardner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen, celebrating 31 years in our little kitchen.
I thought it was 32.
They're going on 32.
Okay, let's say 32.
Why don't, it sounds better than 31.
It does.
31 is like the flavors, the Baskin-Robbins. We're 32.
Yeah.
You know, the last time that I saw Tim Fish, who was... wrote for the Press Democrat for years and years. Mm-hmm. He couldn't even drink. He wasn't old enough to drink. And now he's worked with the Wine Spectator for the last 17, 18 years. It's great to see you again.
Oh, thanks. It's great
to
be here.
You were a feature editor at the Press Democrat going back, beginning when?
I started there as a feature writer, entertainment writer, really, in 1989. And I worked there all, and I became food editor and wine editor, which job we sort of created at that moment. In 95, and I did that until 98, when I went off and tried the first web mania with winetoday.com, which lasted a couple of years.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
I think I even contributed.
Maybe you did.
Yeah.
I think maybe you did. So then when the dot-com bust happened, I was lucky enough to land at the Spectator. Mm.
And you've been at the Wine Spectator since 2001 or so?
17 years, yeah.
17 years.
We were talking about how at the Wine Spectator, it's the most amazing publication for all kinds of reasons.
Okay.
But one is that the cast of journalists and all of it hasn't changed. And you were saying you're still the youngest.
I'm still considered the youngest of the senior editors. Yeah. I'm still paying my dues, I guess.
How many senior editors are there?
Seven, I think. I should know that off the top of my head.
That's right. And what's your specialties?
Right now, in the last couple of years, I have wonderfully inherited all of Oregon wines, and I have been exploring Oregon Pinot Noirs. I just find those wines beautiful and fascinating. They're very similar to Sonoma County Pinots, but they have a little more tension and a little more savoriness and a little more acidity, and I like that. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have both to drink. And then I also review all the wines of Washington State. And then in California, I review Zinfandel, which I will never give up, sparkling wine, and Rhone Reds, and rosés. I get to review all the rosés of California and Oregon and Washington.
So you're basically West Coast wines only.
Yes, that's all correct.
Right. Well, that's still
you
tens
were saying,
of thousands
it's great
of wines.
You don't have to fly to New York every week.
No.
Yeah.
I just mostly I fly more to Oregon and Washington than just about anything.
So, How often does your writing appear in the magazine? Is it every month or?
Yeah, we have about 15 issues a year now. Some months we have one, and some months we have two editions. I'm in almost every issue. I mean, I'm working on a cover story for this spring, so that's what I've been doing lately. So those are the most intensive things that I do.
So just out of care, what is that? Can you tell us or not?
It's regarding Oregon.
Okay.
So not regarding California, my home.
Yeah.
Home of 30 years.
Do you you review wines predominantly in your writing?
It's about half.
Write any editorial content in the magazine?
I mean, I write a lot of feature stories, I write news stories to some degree. But I split my time tasting and writing, which is good because it gives me a break. I mean, they're both really appealing as individually, but together it keeps life a little interesting. You know, I can taste for a couple of days in a row and then decide I need to take a break. I'll just do some writing, or I'll go interview a winemaker or something like that.
I think one of the most entertaining pieces you wrote was, "Are you a snob?" The wine world is full of people who seem to know it all. Did you get much feedback from readers about that particular editorial?
You know, to some degree I did. I can't remember specifically now that one, but that was my thing for a while. And I'm not saying I have given up on it, but the notion of taking the heaviness out of wine. I think it reminds me, John and I were just talking about restaurant reviews, and it's like, to make it work, you have to have the high-end stuff and little hole-in-the-wall stuff. So I just, I love the top end stuff you'll find on our top 100 list, but you know, I love, there's nothing I like better than a good and expensive Italian white, for example, you know, Zinfandel, of course. I mean, I like, and a nice, I mean, some of the value sparkling wines still coming out of California, they're hard to beat.
It seems to me that it would be difficult for your palate not to become jaded. After all these years, you have access to the greatest wines produced on the West Coast at any time of day. How do you go back and appreciate that $12 bottle of wine when you've just had a $190 bottle of Pinot Noir?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of wine writers probably feel the same way. But I think, again, I hate to belabor the restaurant analogy, but it's like sometimes I like eating at Villette in Villette, I'm sorry, in Healdsburg.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just like getting tacos. And it's, you really just can't compare the two to each other, really. You just go in knowing you're going for a different sort of gut feeling. And that's how I approach it anyway.
There was that you know, often you would read things, not so much in the Wine Spectator. Well, but you'd get them in the Wine Spectator. It was this thing of these, you know, really kind of untouchable wines. Untouchable, right? Because not very much was produced,
right?
And also because they were so breathtakingly expensive, you
right.
know, that they were not for the common man at all. So that you must sprinkle that in somehow.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, that's where the passion lies for many of our readers with those wines. And it's, on one level, you think, wow, you can never get that. Why even worry about it? But on another level, there's, I mean, all our entertainment is, there's a wish value in all our entertainment, isn't it? Sort of like, you, wow, I'd love to have that. What would it be like to have that? So for, I think most true wine lovers look at that and say, oh, wow, that is great. Wouldn't you know, I'd love to taste, drink that sometime, but I'm going to have this and I'm going to have a good, you know, enjoy my dinner tonight. So I think that's part of it. I think that's what has helped us, is that we have always done a good job on the high-end things, but as the internet has come into our lives, the internet is much more concerned with money, you know, and things of value. So we try to address that as much as we can with our internet readers.
So what about all of those bloggers who are out there who are writing? I mean, are they competition for you? I mean, I know on the food side, certainly, it's like, stop already with all the people who have an opinion about something. It's a little bit like, I don't know, all you need is a computer connection and suddenly you're an expert.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's, I try not to look at them as competition because, I mean, I remember when I was either a starting writer or an independent writer, freelancer, it's not an easy thing. And so, and I'm friends with a lot of those people. And I respect what they have to say. And I think they feed a different audience to a degree, although we do have blogs on our website as well. I think it just depends on, I don't think blogs in general are as popular as they were a few years ago. I think that's pretty given at this point. And so I imagine that the wine blogs fall into that same sort of place. But, you know, I sort of look at it as, the more good information that can be out there, the better. So as long as they're putting out good information and true information, that's great.
There was a really great wine writer survey that was done by Wark Communications.
Yeah, Tom Wark.
Did you read the results of that?
I haven't read the results yet, but I heard about it.
Well, let me throw out a couple of things and see how where you fall on the spectrum. One of the questions was, if you review wines, which best describes any rating or reviewing system you use? 64% responded no rating system, and 16% said the 100-point system. Isn't the Spectator a 100-point system?
Right. They're Spectator and several other publications. But then you have other publications that use a mix. There's the 20-point scale that some people use. I think is it the Grapevine or is it the Connoisseur's Guide? I forget. No, the Connoisseur's Guide has the Puffs. That's right.
Puffs.
Yeah. Both of those are very good publications, by the way. I try to read those books as often as I can.
Well, also, the conclusions from that survey was, of those using the 100-point rating system, 56% taste more than 100 wines per month. while only 11% of those that do not use the 100-point rating scale. How many wines do you taste per month?
Well, last year I reviewed about 2,000. So I tasted them blind, wrote up the note, so 2,000 of them last year.
So you have the 100 best wines list, which is just out?
Yes, it just came out in our current
issue. So you can maybe reveal some?
Yeah, so it's out.
We have to take a break. We just can't.
Some of those, but no, I understand that. But the question about that is, and then we can talk about that later on, is can you really do that? Can you really pick 100 best wines of the tens of thousands of wines there are in the world? I mean, it's a...
Well, you know,
do you get grief about that?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, anyone who does any sort of top list gets grief, of course, and so we're accustomed to it. It's a tough balance. I mean, we take it very seriously, and I can't say tons about the process, but the process is spelled out in the publication. But basically, it's a balance of availability, how much it costs, what region it's from, but most importantly is the review and what we say, how much we like it, what score it got. So those are the driving forces.
636-1350. If you'd like to have a word with Tim Fish, I'm sure he'd be glad to talk wine with you. He's one of the senior editors of Wine Spectator, the most powerful publication on wine in America today. Tim's been writing for them for some 17 and a half years. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner live today in the KS Hardo Kitchen. Back after this, and as I said, if you want to shoot us an email question for Tim, that's fine too. Steve@ksro.com or 636-1350.
Windsor hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 103.5.
54 years ago, John Pronzini was farming hay in Marin and Sonoma counties, and like every ambitious young man, started looking for a winter project. He was up in the mountains on a fishing trip with his folks, and he was inspired by the beautiful fir trees surrounding them.
And so began the Pronzini Christmas Tree Farm.
They also have available for sale the most innovative and beautiful accessories like decorated wreaths, centerpieces, garlands, and ornaments. Make it a special family outing and choose from 6 varieties of the best quality fir trees available at any of their locations. Many things have changed since 1963, from axes to power saws. One thing that never has and never will change at Pronzini's is their commitment to the quality of their trees and the service to their customers. Ask your cell phone to call Pronzini Christmas Tree Farms and make this holiday special for you and your family. Or go to PronziniTrees.com, PRONZINI Trees.com.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market invites you to shop the market for your holiday feast. Enjoy selections of fresh and organic greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet the local ranchers who offer a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork. Choose a wide variety of seafood from Anna's Seafood. Fresh fish, crabs, clams, oysters, and mussels. Sample and bring home local dairy products like Joe Mattis's delicious St. George cow cheese. Everything you need to create the freshest holiday dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Happy homeowners say,
I love my home.
Yet sometimes that's followed by,
but I hate my kitchen.
Fortunately, that can change. Hudson Street Design can help you love every room in your home. Our design experts work with top manufacturers for cabinets, plumbing fixtures, even windows and window coverings that will offer the perfect solution for your kitchen or bathroom.
Oh, did you say bathroom?
Yes. Let us inspire your next project. Start now for 2019 at HudsonStreetDesign.com, the North Bay's premier showroom.
This is Jessica Belcher with PG&E. If you encounter a down power line, you need to stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KS Arno Kitchen. Today joined by Tim Fish, one of the senior writers for Wine Spectator. Tim is the lead taster for Oregon and Washington wines and also for sparkling wines. And we'll give you some of his suggestions for sparkling wines a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
The top 100? We were interested in that, weren't we?
So where should you start? From the number 10 going up? Or?
Well, you know, for me, what especially being on this show, I'm interested in talking about the Sonoma wines, of course. Mm-hmm. But conveniently, number 10 on the list is a Sonoma wine. It's Morgan Twain Peterson's Bedrock Heritage, Sonoma Valley. Mm.
And that has always been one of the most affordable wines in my experience.
For some reason, my printout is not telling me, reminding me of the price. But it is, you know, I think it's in the 40s. Mm-hmm. I think so. But and what's so great about that wine is it's so much about a place, a specific vineyard that has history to it. And it just is laced with all these dozens of different types of obscure varietals. And Morgan's done a lot of gene mapping in it. It's incredible wine. It stood up amongst the best when we were tasting it.
And they call it almost an Italian field blend?
Yeah, that's more or less, because it doesn't even say Zinfandel on it. It'll just say the Bedrock Heritage. So it's definitely majority Zin, but it depends on vintage to vintage. And I think it's probably in the 60%, but I'm just guessing here.
Has it been in the top 10 before, Tim?
No, this is actually only the third time that Zinfandel has been in the top 10. Let's see, about 10 years ago, Segacio's Sonoma County Zin placed. And then 2 years ago, one of the Hartford Court Zinfandels placed. And those are both.
So just as a little footnote, Zinfandel, it's taken us a long time to figure out where it came from. For a long time, we were believing that it was indigenous to America.
Right.
It's not, is it?
No, it's... Well, the expert on that is Carol at Carol Meredith. She's the one that did a lot of that work, and you know, and is it Croatia?
I just got back. And it's the Plavich Mali.
Yeah,
the grape that supposedly was some of the parentage of the Zinfandel.
And evidently, it doesn't taste exactly like Zinfandel, but it's very similar. So.
Now that they can examine the genes and all of that kind of stuff, you can...
Well, the interesting thing about it is the Bordeaux lovers and Burgundy lovers always said it wasn't a classic grape, but it is considered a classic grape at heritage grape where it's from. So in some ways, it's not just this plucky little American wine.
Yeah.
So number 10 is Morgan Twain Peterson's Bedrock Zinfandel.
That's right.
That's number 10. And it's in the 40s
I think so, yeah.
Price,
I thought sure the price. Oh, here it is right here. It's 46. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
Fantastic.
I gave it 95 points.
Wow. Number 9.
This is the... Oh, I can't even read it.
See, he needs a prescription change.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the San Lorenzo. It's from Etna, which is an area in Italy, volcano.
Yeah.
And it's a very distinctive wine. I could have easily seen it, it was any number of the wines in top 10. It just has a lot of personality.
And what is the grape there?
You know, I should know that, and I don't, bad on me.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Sangiovese, but I'm not positive. And then number 8 is a really lovely Châteauneuf de Pape, Le Vieux d'Argent, and that's beautiful. And the Châteauneufs are really popular right now. I remember when they used to be fairly cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're not so much anymore, but that's what happens when you're popular. And then the other wine that I reviewed that's in the top 10 is number 7, and that's from Oregon. It's Colleen Clemens Pinot Noir. It's their Chehalem Mountains Dop Creek. And the amazing thing about that is it's I gave it 95 points, and it's $26. Mm. And it's really lovely.
I'm unfamiliar.
Colleen Clemens. No, they're not. They've been around for maybe 10 years or so, but I think they're making some better and better wines. They have a very distinctive place where the winery is and where they've planted their vineyards. Really steep and rocky. I wouldn't want to hike down it, you know, that sort of thing.
Is she the winemaker?
No, that's named after the owner's, I think, mother or mother-in-law. I'm not positive. Mm.
Not the mother-in-law. No, I'm teasing.
And it's Colleen Clemens?
Yes, that's right.
I don't know the last time I heard of Pinot Noir that was $26.
Yeah, that quality. Type of well, I, you know, it startled me how good it was at that price. So I guess bad on me. But it was when I unbagged it and it was like, wow. And then, you know, I retasted it to make sure. Most of these wines have been tasted a couple times, by the way.
I mean, so that's a number 7.
So can I ask you, because you're intimate with Oregon, I mean, the industry there continues to grow and all of this stuff, but they've really focused, haven't they, on Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Gris.
Right.
They have. And they're not trying to, except in southern Oregon, which is a different climate.
Applegate and Rogue, they're doing some reds and some roans even down there. But Willamette is focused. Willamette is like 90% Pinot Noir, I'm guessing. And then 6% Pinot Gris. And Chardonnay is actually smaller production than Pinot Gris is. Because, you know, about 20, 25 years ago, Oregon went big on Pinot Gris. Mm-hmm. And it sort of worked out, but not to what they thought of.
Yeah.
So, but there's some really incredible Chardonnays coming out of there now. Steeply priced, but they're nice wines.
Yeah. You say steeply priced, like 50 and above, 60, 70.
Yeah.
Number 6.
This is a Mark Auberge Chardonnay. Mark is, I think he's a local boy. I think he's from Napa. He has a lot of vineyards here in Sonoma that he harvests from, especially over by Forestville. But this one is the Carneros Hyde Vineyards, Larry Hyde.
And I've amazingly had that particular wine at a tasting, and it was sensational.
Yeah, it was. It's really lovely. He has a nice way of giving Chardonnays a real richness that a lot of the people who like the really big, buttery Chardonnays can find appealing. But it isn't big and buttery. It just has that texture and richness and very good minerality and acidity to it to make it snap.
It's finding, you know, I hear people talk about this all the time. I'm sure you do too. Balance.
Right.
Between that. Yes, you can have some oak and but it all needs to be in some kind of balance.
You'd be surprised. There are very few people that I talk about, for example, with Chardonnay these days that do 100% new oak. Almost. Mm-hmm. And 25 years ago, that happened. Mm-hmm. I get much more 20, 30% new oak. And the rest of it is just a couple-year-old neutral oak that they're trying to get the advantages of barrel aging without all the impressions of it.
So say again the name of the wine.
Colleen Clement. Oh, no, Auberge. Auberge. That's his last name,
Mark Auberge. He's based in Napa Valley, though.
He's based.
But the fruit comes from
Carneros. A lot of his fruit comes from Carneros,
Number 5.
Good old Dom Perignon, but it was a legacy edition. So it's a special bottling, and it was really, really incredible. And frankly, we don't put a lot of bubbly on our top 100. I don't know, there's no particular reason for it, but it's sort of like we don't put a lot of rosé on it either. And again, no particular reason for that, but it's a lovely wine. $180.
Okay.
Okay, and the next one is, and I always have trouble with this one, La Rioja Alta Rioja Gran Reserva, Selección Especial. So it's
it's Spanish. It's great that you're not the Spanish wine reviewer.
No, it really is. Yeah, I'm still working on my English skills, let alone learning a second language. And it's a beautiful wine, and Rioja is a region that they make very distinctive wines, and I love the wines there. So, and then 3 is Castello. Let me make sure I'm I'm really bad with these things. Sorry, guys. Castello di Vopplia Chianti Classico Reserva.
Oh, yeah.
$35.
Oh.
Another good buy.
Wow. And so that's Sangiovese, obviously.
That is Sangiovese.
Yeah.
Two is a Bordeaux, which have increasingly been difficult to get into our top 10 just because of the prices. You know, they're very, most of them. But this is a smaller growth. I think it's a second or third growth. And it's Chateau Canon-la-Gaffrière Saint-Emilion.
Mm-hmm.
So it is on the right bank. So it's more, instead of cab driven, it's more cab franc and more Merlot driven. I'm not sure what the blend is here, but and the number one is Sassy Acaya, which is super Tuscan, and it's a kick A wine.
yeah.
It's mostly cab, just like most super Tuscans are, and it really showed brilliantly.
And
$245,
yeah. $200,
which is which for a super Tuscan is not. There are more expensive ones. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And those are ones that you lay down for a number of years?
Oh, I mean, that's approachable now, especially if you're eating something, but I would hold on to it for a while.
So you've got wines, nothing that's $1,000 a bottle. Mm-hmm. The most expensive one, is that the one, the 250?
I would say that's probably the most expensive one on the list. I haven't compared this year, but it looks like it is as I'm going through it.
So from $26 to a couple hundred dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also worth knowing, if I have a moment, what other Sonoma and Bay.
Yes, what other ones
local? Yeah. Number 27 is the Roeder Estate, just the regular non-vintage.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's such a delicious
one. Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
And number 36 is the Ferrari Carano Chardonnay Treterra Vineyard. Number 40 is Klein. It's a Contra County Zin, but it's Klein.
Mm-hmm.
Local family. Yeah. 78 is Landmark Overlook. Another good value one. Mm-hmm. It's $25
and
a bottle.
And it's been on the list for
many
years.
It's one of our favorite go-to values over the years. 80 is Behringer's Knights Valley, which is Knights Valley being Sonoma County. And that's always another good value, too. It's 36 now.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be about 18, but that was back when we were young, right? And then just two more. 91 is Ridge Litton Springs. They always do a good job. Mm-hmm. And the 93 is Carol Shelton's Wild Thing Rosé. She makes some very nice wines. And that's a really good fruit-forward but still complex rosé.
So could you find all of those wines, do you think, in the market now?
Well, the Sassy Acaya, for example, it's huge production, so that's not a problem. The Aubert, for example, would be tough.
Mm-hmm.
The Bedrock you could probably find. And the ones that are lower down the list, I bet those are all pretty available. Yeah.
And were there a lot of Napa Cabernets in the top 100?
You know, actually, it's interesting. Typically, there will be. But this year, there just didn't seem to be. I don't know why that is. Just some years, it plays that way. Some years, we'll have two or three in the top 10 if it's a really strong year for Napa Cabernet.
You know, that's an interesting question, because one of the little sort of backstories about Napa Cab, you know, because it's been so iconic, is that it's getting hotter in Napa, and the cabs are getting bigger, you know, more alcoholic, more extracted, that they're not quite as elegant maybe as they have been in the past. Is that?
Well, I think that vintners and growers are aware of that. And I think they are all taking their own individual approaches or not worrying about it, depending on who you're talking about. But they're definitely aware that the market has shifted as along with while the climate has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's driven by both things. Sometimes, though, all it takes is one really ripe vintage to get everyone convinced that Napa Cab's too ripe.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be that vintage, fellas, you know. But I think in the long run, I think the dialing back started a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because climate change was one of the questions that was asked in the Wine Writer Survey.
Right.
It was about how important was climate as far as in your writing. And everyone said extremely important that their readers, their consumers wanted to know more about climate change in the future. So that was a big topic.
Yeah. I mean, we try to stay on top of it, and we have several writers who have a sort of specialty in that and follow it when we do bigger stories. But it's, there's no doubt. I mean, you can feel it when you're talking to growers and winemakers in certain regions that are already showing some effects. I mean, it's already, I mean, with all the growth happening in Willamette Valley, for example, I can't help but think people know that if they're going to put in a vineyard now, they're not going to put it in, they're going to keep it in mind climate when they're putting in a new vineyard, let's put it that way. They have to. It's just too expensive not to.
70% of the wine writers that responded to the survey said it will fundamentally change the way viticulture is done worldwide.
Well, worst case scenario, you can have all these things that, I mean, you'll hear the dreaded, you know, Napa will be Lodi in, you know, 20, 30 years. I don't think it's going to play out that way, but it's definitely there. It's definitely happening. And we're crazy if we don't, whether you believe it's caused by man or not, we're crazy if we don't try to do something to address it.
It's interesting. I have a British friend who has been telling me recently that they're making some amazing sparkling wines in southern England and all of that stuff, which was always way too cold, too wet, too all of that.
The British publications write about them with some frequency.
Yeah.
We'll take a break at that point. Tim Fish is joining John Ash and me in the KS Ardo Kitchen. Tim is one of the senior writers for Wine Spectator. This is KS Ardo.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
I'm Erin Brockovich. I've spent 27 years holding Pacific Gas and Electric accountable across this state. That's why I know you need a team that will always be on your side. After the 2017 wildfires, law firms flooded your communities looking to make a quick buck. But our team is different. We are committed to this fight because holding PG&E accountable and giving you the representation you deserve is the right thing to do. We're here to work with all of our clients to build their cases and make sure they're made whole for what they lost in these devastating fires. We're here for you, and we always will be. Learn more at pgelawsuit.com or call us today, 707-237-2445.
You can meet the team, hear testimonials, and have many of your questions answered on the website, pgelawsuit.com, or call 707-237-2445. Noreen Evans of Watts Guerra LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this advertisement.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market invites you to shop the market for your holiday feast. Enjoy selections of fresh and organic greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, and walnuts. Meet the local ranchers who offer a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork. Choose a wide variety of seafood from Anna's Seafood. Fresh fish, crabs, clams, oysters, and mussels. Sample and bring home local dairy products like Joe Mattos's delicious St. George cow cheese. Everything you need to create the freshest holiday dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Remember to check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hi, it's Jeff Davis. As you have likely heard, Smothers European Volvo Cars has celebrated their grand reopening. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, do yourself a favor and visit Smothers' new modern Volvo showroom. It's wide open and has a comfortable waiting area, which you Volvo drivers can enjoy when you need servicing. As you've heard me mention, Volvo is making some of the most luxurious sedans and functional crossovers these days, while continuing their focus on safety. Smothers European Volvo Cars had the unveiling of the new 2019 XC40 SUV. It's a whole new automotive concept. They can explain it to you. Prices start at just $33,200. And you can still find some irresistible deals on 2016s and 17s. If you're thinking about a new car for the holidays or for 2019, visit Smothers at 2881 Corby Avenue or smothers-european-volvo-cars.com.
with Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast. Here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
A dry weekend until the very end of it. Today, mostly blue skies at 62, 61 on the coast. Partly cloudy tonight, low 40, 44 on the shores. Mostly cloudy for Sunday at 60 degrees, 59 in Bodega Bay. Do have a showers expected that night, though, creeping into Monday morning. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Steve Garner and John Ash in the KSRO kitchen, and delighted to welcome Tim Fish, one of the senior writers for Wine Spectator, and based here in Napa, Sonoma County. And Tim is the lead writer for Wines of Oregon and Washington. And also, we kind of call him the bubble boy, too, because you wrote an article last December, January, called Bubbly Bliss, the U.S. Sparkling Wines that Offer Distinctive Flavors for the Holiday Table, some of your top recommendations.
Right, yeah.
And last year, your top recommendation, do you remember what it was last year?
No.
It was Domaine Carneros, the Brut Carneros Estate 2012, $35, 93 points. There's some great values in sparkling wine still.
There really are. And I've been reviewing West Coast sparkling wines California sparkling wines for about 10 years. And I think they're just getting better and better. I think the thing about sparkling wines is it's incremental. You know, it's like you can't just say, oh, that vintage wasn't good and next year everything will be better. Well, you've already made decisions to make that sparkling wine that you can't change at that point. So it's a longer learning curve. But there are both great values and there are some just great high-end luxury bubblies coming out of the West Coast, too.
Well, but on your top 100 list, to have Roeder on there, just their regular, what is that? That's $20 or something like that?
Last year, it was your top value wine.
Yeah. It often is.
It was the Roeder Estate Brut Anderson Valley, non-vintage, 92 points, $24. How can you do better?
Well, you know, the Roeder Hermitage, which is their vintage and they're more high end, it's only $48, which its quality is so much better than just about anything out there for that price. And the latest one, 2012, is the review hasn't come out, but it's an excellent
bubbly. So can we get it out of you? What are your picks for this year?
Well, it's one of the things I like about covering sparkling wine is I can typically find one wine to get excited about from every producer because they all have their specialties. And this year, one of my favorites was Iron Horse released a 2010 Late Disgorged Brut. And it was just gorgeous. It has everything. A late disgorged means it's aged on the yeast for a while, which adds certain qualities like nuttiness, bread dough, any number of things like that. And it just sort of adds complexity. And it was just gorgeous. I'm never disappointed in their wines. That was one of my favorites for this year. I think that you mentioned Domaine Carneros. I think their La Reve is their high-end ones, and it's just... It's quite lovely too. It's more of a and slightly more in the French style. Both Roeder and Domaine Carneros, in this region, I find have the most closeness to the classic champagne acidity and structure. Not to lessen anything else, others out there. Another one of my go-to bubbly houses is Gloria Ferrer. Because you just can't beat them for value. I mean, they're Brut, they're non-vintage Brut, current release. I think I gave it a 91 points, and it's $22. You can usually find it cheaper than that. But they also have some very nice. They released a late disgorged rosé this year that was just gorgeous. And you know, when I first moved here 30 years ago, I used to go to take people visiting to the Corbel tour because it was cool. You know, it was like we were all just learning about wine country.
It still is cool.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while.
No, I have a personal connection.
Oh, good. But they just keep making, I think their bubblies, their basic bubblies are getting better and better. I really enjoyed the latest non-vintage Brut. But also the one, another one to look for is they have a, it's either vintage or non-vintage depending on the release, but it's made with organic grapes. Mm-hmm. And that has really been doing quite well the last few years.
And it's under $20 or so. Exactly. Almost unheard of.
It's under 15.
Is it really for organic grapes? Yeah.
Well, you know, it pains me to see people make mimosas out of things like Korbel because I like them as they are. But if you're a little snobby, that would be a good way to make everybody happy. Right.
We'll take a break, come back with Tim Fish, senior writer for one of the senior writers for Wine Spectator. It's great to have him in the KSRO kitchen today, joining me, Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash.
Traffic on the fives, weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
If you're in law enforcement, a sports person, or just want to shop for firearms and accessories, this holiday season, make sure Santa knows what's on your list. Law enforcement always enjoys discounts on accessories at Rinker Arms, and during the holidays, Rinker Arms is extending these same discounts to everyone. So come on in and see what's new. And while you're here, check out the new 2019 schedule for training classes. Sign up in-store or online at rinkerarms.com. Maybe you're shopping for a friend or a loved one and don't know what they want. A gift certificate is always a good choice at Rinker Arms. With integrity, service, and value, it's Rinker Arms,
your gun shop.
2600 Mendocino Avenue, right next to Economy Lock and Key, or online at rinkerarms.com. Rinker Arms, aiming forward.
Visiting Angels is America's choice in senior home care. We believe your loved ones should never have to give up living at home. Visiting Angels provides personal home care up to 24 hours per day, including meals and light housework. Ask about our dementia care at home. You'll select your professional caregiver. Look up visitingangels.com or call 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE.
Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care.
Hi, Pat Kerrigan here. It's your last chance to join me on the trip of a lifetime. It's the St. Paddy's Day with Pat tour to Ireland. We'll be leaving next March for a 10-day adventure on the Emerald Isle, visiting Dublin, Waterford, Killarney, and Limerick. We'll even overnight in a castle on St. Patrick's Day. What a great Christmas present this would be. This land tour includes most meals, all lodging, transportation, and air. Call KSRO's travel agent, Elise Corey, at TravelWise, 935-9493. Check out the itinerary at ksro.com.
This is Jessica Belcher with PG&E. Storm season is coming, and that could cause power outages in your area. We want you to be prepared and stay safe. Sign up for outage alerts via text, email, or phone at pge.com/beprepared.
Shop, dine, and play in downtown Santa Rosa. This holiday season, all downtown parking garages are free weeknights between 6 and 8. That's 6 to 8 p.m. weeknights and all day Saturday and Sunday in downtown Santa Rosa parking garage.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
A few minutes left in the KSRO kitchen with Tim Fish from Wine Spectators, one of the senior writers. And John, you wanted to address
I did. We were talking about it off the air, and that's this whole idea of natural wines, organic, biodynamic. You know, is it important? Part of it is I think it's a lifestyle for a lot of for a lot of people.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's important too.
And does it make a difference?
Natural wine, as far as like, there's a lot of natural wine that you know, they'll do extended macerations and get, you know, I had a Pinot Gris that looked like a rosé the other day because it stayed in contact with the skins, and that's how wine gets color. And those run the range, and those are definitely a lifestyle choice, I think. Those run the range from, I think, being very good and very different, but still a well-made wine, to being really just funky. and just like, no, thank you. I've what is the acronym for not in my mouth? You know, no, I smell it. And it's like, no, I don't need to taste that. So there's a range there, but I understand why some people find them significant. They think they like the story of it. They also like the difference. There's someone's doing something different and new, which I applaud. So that is definitely a lifestyle choice. I think biodegradable and organic are also to a degree a lifestyle choice, but I think that the evidence is getting pretty strong that there are advantages with both of those, and I'm not sure if we need to bury cow horns, as you would do, full of cow poop or whatever, in the ground. I'm not sure you need to go that far, but I think healthy vineyards, living vineyards, however you can achieve that, I think is the best way to go. I mean, you know, 30 years ago, the vineyards were, besides the vines themselves, they were pretty dead. I mean, not a lot of bugs, not a lot of birds, that sort of stuff. So now it's changed, and I think the vineyards are healthier, and I think we'll all be healthier for it. If I would taste a biodynamic wine against a non-biodynamic wine, of course I wouldn't be able to taste the difference. I don't think anyone could, and I think it's like a good recipe. It makes good food. It works. It's healthy for the vineyard. It's healthy for us.
The information that came back during the wine writers survey, the nationwide survey, was this question, Tim. Which of the following statements best describes your view of natural wine? 32% of the respondees said unlikely to impact on winemaking or with consumers. 20% said necessary approach to balance against over manipulation. 17% an important wine that will trend that will continue to attract consumers. And 13% of the respondees said, a deceptive movement all about marketing.
That sounds about right percentage-wise to me.
You know, but having said that, some of the most important wineries in the world have been doing this, have been, you know, doing things organically for many decades.
Oh, exactly.
And so there's something there that says, but they don't make a big deal out of it.
No, I think so. I agree with you. Some people, as we were talking about off the air, some people basically farm organic, but they don't necessarily go for the certification. So I think it's a matter of, do you want to look good or do you run a healthy vineyard? Mm-hmm.
And the takeaway from the survey, and it seems obvious, is that younger writers have a higher opinion of the importance of natural wine than older writers. Those writing for 20 years or more have a much dimmer view of natural wine. But natural wine, remember, there's no legal definition of that. Organic is organic, and biodynamic, although there's really not, unless you are Demeter certified, can be hither nor there. But that seems to be a stronger commitment to soil improvement. When you adopt an organic protocol.
It does make sense that you know, you're treating things kindly and keeping all kinds of bugs and other things still.
The good ones, right?
the good ones still.
But ultimately, people, I think most people, at least what they're talking about consumers, is they're buying on quality and price. Well, those are the two most important things.
I don't know if we're most out of time, probably, but no, I've had a young wine writer a couple years ago tell me that how a wine tastes isn't important. It's the story behind it. And it's sort of like, well, I like a good story. I mean, I'm not going to write a feature story or a news story about a winery if I don't like their wine. But it's sort of like, the taste is not important. Just what dumbfounded me. It's like, I want to have a really lousy steak, but it's from a cow that was really treated well, you know?
Isn't that interesting? What do you sense? Give us the crystal ball, 2019. What kind of stories are you going to feature, maybe focus on a little more in 2019?
Well, I think one of the things about 2019 is I think the wine market has stalled. I mean, there have been several reports just out this week talking about it. And that was inevitable. I mean, how many of those have we been through over the years? Because it's been one hell of a ride. Things have been great. Production was pretty good, pretty big this year, so there's a lot of excess. I think this is going to be a settling out year. I think it's going to be a lot of people are going to take stock and decide what they're going to do. I don't see any new varietals jumping to the fore at this point. I might be wrong. I mean, rosé and sparkling wine continue to be popular, but they continue to be a niche market within the greater scheme. I mean, people still want to drink Merlot. They do. Mm-hmm. A lot of Merlot is still sold, as much as people like to make fun of it.
Despite that movie. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think wines like Pinot Noir are going to continue to draw some love. And I think it's good if you guys, everyone should explore, as much as I say, buy Sonoma County. There are some great wines from the world out mm-hmm. there. And you know, go to Bottle Barn or go to, what's the place downtown? I'm spacing the name of it.
I can see it.
Yeah. A good wine shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right on the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go there and buy a Sonoma County bottle and buy something else just for fun.
And one final takeaway from the Wine Writers Survey, regional varietal and industry changes, the demise of small family wineries will continue to impact how wine is covered. That was one thing. Wines in the other 47 states will begin to take more of the spotlight away from the West Coast. Agree or disagree?
I think there's some truth to that. I think what regions exactly will be able to pull that off is really dependent. I mean, there are obviously weather issues and there are disease issues. There are some diseases in various states that are really bad for vineyards. But, you know, there are some nice wines. I mean, I'm tasting bubbly out of New Mexico, and those are some nice wines.
I was just going to mention gray. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Long Island's making some nice wines. Yeah. There are some lovely wines coming out of the Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
The question is, will the Michigans and the Colorados and of the world, will they be able to get a better foothold?
Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. I applaud it. I want to see it happen. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so you're coming back in 2019.
Sure.
That's already an invitation.
Well, you're going to come back before that.
We only have 2 weeks left. Oh, wait.
In 2019.
I said 2019, he'll be back.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're almost at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Unless we want him back next week, we're almost out of the year.
Yeah. I'll run out of things to say.
So thank you. This has been great.
Hey, it's been an honor. You two are doing great things for food and wine in this region. I applaud you.
Thanks. And this is the first time we've ever had a wine writer on the show or a wine producer with glasses where we never tasted wine, which is a first. We've grown up.
Well, so I applaud us for doing that because sometimes it's a little difficult. Here we are enjoying the wine and the poor listeners don't get a chance to put it in their mouth.
Exactly.
We will be welcoming the twins next week, John, to the KSRO Kitchen. Yeah. The two twins from Sonoma, some of the hottest chefs in the country. They're only 16 years old and we knew them when they were 11. They're continuing their career writing for major publications, teaching, working in restaurants.
And they're so cute.
The twin sisters, Audrey and Lily, will be in the KSRO Kitchen with some festive seasonal recipes and what they've been up to.
Do you think they'll bring some treats for us?
I emailed them.
Oh, good.
Okay. Bring something. So that's next week on the KSRO Kitchen and, of course, Garden Talk with Gwen Kilcher. Stick around following the news. Clark Wolf at the table.